Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday, the 15th of August. Very nice to have you with us on this Monday morning. A little bit cooler, which is nice. Oh, my God, it was hot.
It was hot. Oh. But you think about all the marital problems that to air condition or not air condition brings on in families.
That's a very good point.
I have found that the women I know
yes.
do not want air conditioning.
Right.
Whereas the men want air conditioning.
Yes.
Now, that may be wrong, but I think it's true. I know it's true in my family.
Now, I'm gonna ask you a question, and I'm asking this as a serious question. And knowing you like I do, you may take it as a shot, but I don't mean it as a shot.
Yeah, okay.
Which is, do you have the same threshold at home with air conditioning that you do here with air conditioning?
Well, the nice thing here is when you come into this building, it's universal. Right, so the place is cool, and it doesn't make a lot of noise. The big issue with home air conditioners in the windows is the noise that it makes.
Yeah, it makes a lot of noise. And how about in the car? Because that's where Kelly and I have our disagreements over in the car.
Well, so
she doesn't like it blowing on her. I do. So there's that whole thing.
Well, in this weather, there doesn't seem to be a fight about the car.
That's good, Chris.
I was going to say men sweat more. That's probably why they want the air conditioning on higher. At least I do.
Rich, you want to weigh in on this at all?
I'm good.
Okay, just checking. Good morning. Welcome. Let me introduce our panel to you officially. They've all weighed in, but let us officially introduce them. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Hey, Joe.
And Chris Churchill, the Times Union columnist, joins us. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
And Rich Honan is here. He is a corporate attorney and has a regular on this panel, and we're thrilled to have him.
Great to be here.
Thank you very much. All right, let us go to, it's been delivered. Your device has been delivered. We're working on a computer for Alan, and I think we've got it down.
Oh,
here.
Great.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ian Pickus, ladies and gentlemen.
Was that my password or not?
No, it wasn't.
You'll have to tell me what it was.
The good news is someone does know.
Yes, oh, there you go. All right, good morning and welcome. We have a lot to talk about, and let's get to, I don't know, I guess I always say that, right? We have a lot to talk about, but I guess we do, because if we didn't, then we wouldn't have a show. Let us begin with, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal. It was an opinion piece, op-ed, about Trump's self-reckoning. The GOP nominee and his supporters face a moment of truth. And I will admit that I probably would not have chosen this article had Rich not been on the panel this morning, but I, what?
Okay.
But can I say why?
Go ahead.
Well, first of all, you always chide me as to not including Wall Street Journal.
Right, right.
Wall Street Journal stories.
But they've been so anti-Trump all the way that I would think you'd be making them part of your repertoire.
No, the reason I don't include them, though, as you found out, is that I can't send them to everybody because
right.
there's the paywall, which I can usually
Me
get
too,
around
by the
on
way.
The other ones. Yeah.
There is a way around that one, too. I had to go around it, but
okay.
maybe I shouldn't say it on the air or get a call from the Wall Street Journal.
Maybe you can just share it with your fellow panelists. Because
yeah.
I thought as a subscriber, I can send it to others, but I don't know. Anyway,
no, you could okay. not send it to me. I got
no. I know that. Rich did too, and I just assumed Rich was a subscriber.
No.
Okay. Well, that says a lot. All right. So anyway, Donald Trump lashed out at the media on Sunday afternoon after more stories ascribing dysfunction inside his presidential campaign. "Quote: If the disgusting and corrupt media covered me honestly and didn't put false meaning into the words I say, I would be beating Hillary by 20%." And Mr. Trump said this on Twitter as well. The Wall Street Journal op-ed says that Mr. Trump is right that most of the media want him to lose, but then that was also true of George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, and Ronald Reagan. Mm-hmm. It's true of every Republican presidential nominee. The difference is that Mr. Trump has made it so easy for the media and his opponents. Anyone?
Yeah, I mean, that's an incorrect statement. Yeah, the fact that he has made it so easy is obviously a correct statement. The fact that to compare him to other Republican nominees, in those cases, the right wing media, right, the non-liberal media wanted them to win. What Trump has, what the headwinds he's battling is, yes, he makes it very, very difficult for himself and for anybody who wants to vote for him. But also, he's got both the right-wing media and the left-wing media against him. The Wall Street Journal has been against him, you know, throughout this process. You get the feeling they're just aghast that this even happened. So I think he's got a little more. I think they're understating the case a little bit.
I don't know. But I mean, this whole thing that the media is against him, I think, is overplayed a little bit. I mean, there's a very, very strong anti-Clinton sentiment in much of the media, too. I think he's just running a really, really bad campaign, and he's creating a news narrative every day that's negative, and that's mostly on him. And to say that he'd be 20 points up, that there would be a 30-point swing if the media coverage was different, is ludicrous.
Well, I don't agree with you. I mean, objectively, I think the media is really against him because he really is terrible. But I think the media is against him. I mean, I've never seen the Daily News with one of these headlines every single day, painting him as a clown and a this and a that. And right, by the way, from the very beginning, Chris. So the media is against him, but the media is against him for good reason.
That's the very same media that covered every one of his speeches live during the primary.
Yeah, that's
primary.
The point, right.
I mean, can you have it both ways? He's been saying that, look at all the free media I'm getting. I'm not going to run ads because I'm getting all of this free media, and then to complain about the media.
Right, and it's the same media that has him, you know, whenever he wants to be on, that he's on. You know, this is more of a primary campaign issue than a general election campaign issue, because I think if Hillary called, she could get on too. But I think a lot of the GOP candidates felt that the coverage he received was blatantly unfair.
Now, my pet peeve is all of those people who call and say, stop covering Trump immediately, and he will lose. And I say, and he's winning right now? In other words, the press has been, in fact, you know, on his case from the very beginning. They've been reporting, I think, fairly accurately what he says and what he means and what he could mean. And I think that's what's done him in.
But exactly. And don't you think there would be a, and I'm sure there's a more articulate way of saying this, but I'll just say it this way, which don't you think the poll numbers would be higher if he would just stop doing stupid things?
Right. And it's ludicrous for him to expect that the stupid things he does are not going to be covered as stupid things.
Well,
that's true. It's just that it's clear that even you don't have to do a stupid thing to have it covered negatively if you're running on the Republican side. It sure doesn't help him that he does do stupid things, and then he does get the anti left wing magnification.
We're not talking about issues. We're just talking about the dumb stuff that he does.
Yeah. Well, remember some of the things that Mitt Romney got hit on, for saying things that ended up being correct. You know, and Candy Crowley jumping in during the debates and things like that, and. It's unrealistic for you're right, Chris. It's unrealistic for Trump to say, "Listen, I won the primary because I got all this media attention, and now I don't like the media attention." It's also unrealistic for him to think there's going to be some kind of objectivity and coverage between Democrat and Republican. That's just not going to be the case.
I disagree with that. I think that Hillary had a bad week, right? She had a bunch of bad news. I think if there was a credible candidate who was hitting her on that bad news consistently day in and day out, I think that would be the dominant narrative.
Well, he's tried, hasn't he, Chris?
No, because he always says something stupid that you know, the Second Amendment thing or something else, or you know, he may do that for a little bit, but there's always something else that comes that he says.
You must feel the frustration that the GOP feels that there you have a very vulnerable.
All.
You don't?
Not at all. The
GOP
brought this on themselves. Okay?
Let me finish my sentence. The question being, you must understand their frustration in that they feel they have a weak candidate in Hillary Clinton. They feel that they have a winnable race, or at least did up a few weeks ago, and that he is squandering those chances by diverting the message onto other things as opposed to many of the items that Chris mentioned.
I do not feel that. I know they feel that frustration. I don't share it. I think that, look, if they got off on the wrong foot, you know, from the whole anti-Trump campaign to the Speaker of the House saying, "I'm not sure I'm going to support the guy," to the Ted Cruz thing, to the Mitt Romney thing, the GOP brought this on by themselves. And by the way, I don't think I agree that he says stupid things. I don't know that even a good candidate, though, would be able to put up much of a fight without the, you know, kind of day-to-day organization of the party, which he clearly does not have because the party's decided they're not going to give it to him. So no, the GOP brought it on themselves. They can live with the frustration.
Wait a second. But there's a big difference between the GOP and the voters who voted for him. I think the establishment GOP wanted nothing to do with this guy. And they made that clear by the number of candidates who they put up and their support and what they said about him. And Romney, I think Romney's, I have two things to say. Number one, I think what really defeated Romney, and I've said it before, was leaving the dog on the top of the car. And because that's something that most people could understand. And secondly, you cannot, speaking of animals, you cannot teach an old dog new tricks. And the reason I say that is he was successful in the primaries. And he thought, and he still thinks, that that's what distinguishes him from the, for the American people. And that's what's killing him now. He couldn't make that shift.
Now he's in love with his rallies, I think is what the problem is. Yeah. He loves the adoration of the crowd, and he has a tendency to get off message and to say things to make them laugh, to make them cheer.
Yeah.
And that's what's hurting him, because he's, I mean, you know, he's just not... You can't play to the room that you already have. You have to be playing to the people at home who are in the middle, who are watching it on TV. And those people are appalled by a lot of what they see at those rallies.
The other thing, too, is that there has been more and more evidence that the people who are attending the rallies, according to the liberal media that's covering him, that he hates. Right, Rich?
Right.
That
he's not the only one who hates them.
No. I know that, but my point is that what we're seeing is that even the people who are attending the rallies are going more for the show than they're going for the guy.
Oh, now sure. they are.
Yes,
but in the beginning,
no, that's Joe, right. Well, that's what, and that's what I'm saying. There's a shift.
I think a lot of people were going for the show.
I think you're right to a certain extent. But now we're seeing this as, you know, they want to be there when the next bomb drops.
And by the way, speaking of bombs, I want to tell everybody to make sure to go to the Daily News today and look at their cartoon, which shows two very somber generals standing there. Trump is looking out the window, where there are two nuclear missiles which have taken off into the air. And Trump, who has his finger obviously on the button, is saying, "What do you mean I can't bring them back?"
Is one of them Iranian? It will be in a few years.
I see. So, Rich, there was a question directed to you online. I'm curious why Rich believes the media is biased against Republicans. And thanks, Daniel.
Wow, can't everybody answer that one? I mean,
I don't think it's true. I actually disagree with you. I think that
I agree too. I disagree too. Yeah.
Well, that's two to two because I'm with Rich.
I think
for good reason.
Turn on AM radio today and try to find a liberal voice.
Oh, well, well.
Well, no, that's the thing. People say, well, but that's a major
well
news.
Said, Chris.
What's the number one rated cable news station? Fox News.
Yeah.
You know, Wall Street Journal is conservative. The Chicago Tribune is conservative. Dallas Morning News is conservative.
Well, is the Wall Street Journal out there beating the bushes for Donald Trump? I don't think so.
No, but that's not their job, and I don't think it's the New York Times. The New York Times may have a liberal editorial page, but it's not their job to beat the bushes for Hillary Clinton. In fact, they've been pretty critical of Hillary Clinton.
No, they haven't.
They have.
I mean, they've been critical. They've been critical of Hillary to the extent that, you know, it has not been the absolute deification that they had for Obama. And there's always been, my understanding is there's always been some antipathy between the Clintons and the New York Times anyway. But it's difficult to read, you know, the New York Times or the Post or watch CNN and not come away from it thinking that they clearly have a pro-democratic bent.
Well, that's true. That's true.
It's obvious, right?
However, the Clintons are messing up already. We have, I'm sorry to keep beating this horse, but we have Hillary extraordinarily going on the media and saying it's too early to find out whether Preet Bharara would be reappointed. And at the same time, we're now hearing news from at least one newspaper suggests, albeit English, that Preet is looking into the Clinton Foundation. This is the kind of stuff that we're going to have to contend with during a Clinton administration. I got to tell you, I'm going to vote for Hillary, but I wouldn't even think about the Trump option. But I do think she's going to bear some watching.
Yeah, I would just say that, I mean, the Times has its faults, and it certainly has a liberal editorial page, and most of its columnists are liberal. But they were very aggressive going after Hillary and the FBI investigation and all that stuff right from the get-go. And if you want to ask, you know, a candidate about the liberal media, talk to Al Gore. You know, the whole thing about him inventing the internet was
True.
Of fabric. You know, every day it was what color clothes was he wearing? What was this? What was that? I mean, I think the candidate themselves often sets the kind of coverage they get. And I think Trump is setting, I think there are worries in a lot of newsrooms, as there are in a lot of homes and kitchen tables, about his fitness for the office, right? And I think a lot of that maybe is being, you can sense that in some of the coverage. But that doesn't, he's not even a conservative. You can't even say that it's a liberal bias because, like, as you said, much of the conservative media is against him too.
Well, that's true because he represents somebody who's a threat to the establishment. But go ahead, Joe.
So I just wanted to add into the feed another log into the fire, which that is, over the weekend, Donald Trump said that he needed their help by helping root out voter fraud, and they wanted them to go to the Donald Trump wanted his supporters to go to a website, his website, to become a Trump election observer. The webpage says, "Thank you for volunteering to be a Trump election observer. We're going to do everything we are legally allowed to do to stop Crooked Hillary from rigging the election. Someone from the campaign will be contacting you soon. Thank you for helping to make America great again." So the question is, there are some concerns by election officials, state officials, of whether even this is legal. With, first of all, how much there is a problem of in-person voting, and what having a supporter of Donald Trump at the polls would do to alleviate that strain.
I don't see maybe I'm wrong. One of the things that, of course, that we know is that when you do something like that, there's always speculation that it's aimed at minority voters. And that is bad. But I think if he wants to have election watchers, he should have election watchers. I have no problem with that.
Doesn't he have the right to, doesn't each party have the right to?
Yeah, but see, he may not be the party. These may not be the party guys. These may be other extracurricular guys. And what they're worried about.
He's saying from rigging the election.
Right.
His insinuation that the election is going to be rigged,
is what? Do you think it'll be the first election that's ever rigged?
He's insinuating that black parts of Pennsylvania, will trick the vote so that Hillary wins.
Right.
And this is in a state where polls show him down by at least 10%.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just silliness. It's just.
I probably agree vis-a-vis Pennsylvania, but look, the institutionalized, officially sanctioned vote fraud that has been going on where somehow it is somehow racist to ask somebody to present evidence that they're a voter before they vote.
No, that's another.
Can I pause you right there and we'll continue our conversation when we come back? We do have a quick news break with the BBC. We'll be back and continue this discussion, get some listener letters as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, and Rich Honan make up the panel. I'm Joe Donahue. We welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And we have several letters. Letters like these.
Like these. Alan spelled wrong, but I won't hold it against you.
Yeah, I'm going to just put that.
Oh, thank you.
There you go.
Mr. Barrar has certainly been successful in rooting out corruption in New York State. It is, however, unreasonable to expect a presidential candidate to commit to an appointment prior to an election. Your constant drumbeat on this matter is a little tired, and that's from Don. Don, I couldn't disagree with you more. This guy has been a hero in this country. He's gone where nobody else goes. To give her a softball in an interview and say, should he be reappointed? And to hear, we'll have to wait on that. And now to hear about the Clinton Foundation being investigated. No, Don, you have a right to write. You have a right to be respected. But I couldn't disagree with you more. Okay, well, did anybody else want to check in on that?
No.
No. Okay, and then we heard from it all keeps changing, from Larry. The idea of poll watches is probably the best idea dishonest Donald has ever come up with. With his history of cheating on his taxes, stealing a few votes would be no moral issue to him. Perhaps in Florida we could get Castro to send a few poll watches to assist in the endeavor. We've certainly extended the offer on many occasions for Cuba. All right.
I think the worry with the poll watchers is that they'll try to intimidate people.
That's right. And of course, the Justice Department will have to be heard from on that in terms of whether or not it is an attempt to discourage minority voters. Mm-hmm. You know? And there is talk about that. Agree with Rich. I'm extremely progressive. Jill Stein, African-American senior citizen voter. However, MSNBC and CNN are biased towards Clinton. The important story about pay for play at the State Department related to the Clinton Foundation is not even being properly covered. This is criminal activity. I don't care about the latest ignorant statement from Trump when the biggest criminals in history are getting away with everything.
Well, I won't argue about MSNBC having a liberal bent, but I think that's how they market themselves. I think that's
that's
kind of, you know, what they do.
And I find CNN to be annoyingly biased, sort of back and forth depending on the show host and at the times. I mean, watching Wolf Blitzer to me is just a, I think he has it out for Clinton. But whatever.
Yeah. But that's part. I mean, you know, it's to a lesser degree. It's the same way at Fox, right? I mean, they're all conservative, but they have different
viewpoints. You know, yes, there's a difference between Hannity and
Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah.
Most of them are pretty. Except most of them are pretty anti-Trump, though.
You know, well, instead of Hannity, the exception. Yes.
Yeah, I heard him by mistake the other day. We had something on I didn't like, so I was going through the AM.
You think Bill O'Reilly is anti-Trump? I mean, they seem to be friends to me.
I think O'Reilly probably. I'm guessing O'Reilly thinks the way a lot of conservatives do, which is, wow, Clinton would be really, really, really bad. But you know,
Trump would be really, really.
But three reallys
instead of four.
Yeah, right.
I disagree with you.
Yeah, I think it's how many reallys.
I think Bill O'Reilly is a good broadcaster who knows that which side his bread is buttered on, and he wants Trump to keep on coming on a show, which he's doing, and I think he's doing a good job.
Be right, but I think O'Reilly's a terrible man, period.
Well, I didn't say that. I just said I think he's a good broadcaster. I mean, he knows what it is to get.
Rush Limbaugh is a good broadcaster, I suppose.
See, I don't.
Joe, you told me once professionally you thought he was good.
I did.
And I was very impressed
Back in the old days, I thought when his show first started, and even up until the Cabbage Incident.
Doesn't he have to be pretty talented just to be able to talk for 3 hours without any guests, without phone calls?
And to be able to stay on as many stations for as many years as he's been on. I think that, you know, talent wins out.
That may say more about the stations than anything else. Because I think AM radio got bought up by the conservative coalition.
Yeah, why is AM radio all right-wing radio?
I would say because of the popularity of Rush Limbaugh. I mean, I think that he came on and changed it. Because prior to that, you had, I mean, well, you always had, who was it, Bob Grant?
Terrible.
Yeah, and I mean, you always had those
people.
Why isn't there
left-wing talk radio?
They've tried it. Air America, they tried that.
That's why Al Franken is a senator now.
Yeah.
Air America didn't work.
Are we ready to move?
Yes.
Okay. With Jill Stein being on CNN with a town hall meeting this Wednesday, Jill Stein being on CNN with a town hall meeting this Wednesday lead to a jump in the polls, leading to inclusion in the debates? Just how did this threshold of 15% in the polls come about? This bar is intentionally exclusive of alternative outside the Dems and GOP being heard. This becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy of low polls. Roger, I had her on for an hour, and I didn't see any huge jump in her.
I do think the thing about the polls
is the idea
of polls becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy, though, is that's a very dangerous thing for Trump, for example. Like once people think you're losing, right, and then they start losing interest.
Well,
especially when
like Trump, considering he's been so laser focused on polls,
right,
kind of acknowledges it and says, you know, if I lose, it's going to be.
But that can work the opposite way, too, where Clinton supporters start relaxing and not working as hard as they could and maybe not showing up at the polls because they think it's going to be a landslide.
Or the Bernieites then saying, well, look, you know, Hillary's going to take New York anyway. I'm going to let her know that, you know, she's got to still think about us. And then they either don't vote or you know, vote for some third party. Next thing you know.
Yeah, we had a long letter, Rich, yesterday that one. It was too long about how Rosemary had called Bernie a loser on the show. Well, you know, he got 47% of the delegates that were there, And, you know, basically, I think Rosemary's point was,
but he lost.
That he lost, therefore let's move on.
Right.
On the other hand, loser is a tough thing to call a guy who really revolutionized American politics, I think.
Well, going back to that letter, I agree that 15% is a very, very high threshold. I mean, that almost makes it impossible. And you can question whether polls should be the barometer for whether somebody gets into a debate or not.
Yeah, you're right, though. You basically end up excluding any kind of new idea or any kind of person with low name recognition who might still have good ideas.
Well, there's a third way of looking at that, I think. And that is that the third party idea is that you get a debate between the two major contenders and then you have the third party person interfering. There is a reality in American politics, the way the Constitution reads, the way it's all developed, that, you know, we have a two-party system. Now, I'm not saying that we have to. But I think to mess up the debates with a third party, and I know what the mail's going to look like now, is a mistake.
But there is a point where the third person becomes kind of a distraction. I mean, it was like that with the Democratic debates when you had Bernie, Hillary, and what's his name?
Yeah, what's O'Malley?
Name? Yeah. O'Malley. You know, he would talk and be like... You know.
Was it O'Malley? Lincoln Chaffee? I can't
remember. No, it was O'Malley.
Yeah. But Jill Stein, I don't think, is even on the ballot in all 50 states anyway, so you could question whether she should be in the...
Yeah, you do have to do your road work on that, right? You know, you have to do your road work before we let you into the gym. You know,
Doug from Woodstock. Yeah. Doug from Woodstock writes a very tough letter to me saying, "You should be more neutral." All right, thank you, Doug. Let's see here. No, I don't think.
You know, Chris, if there was ever going to be a third party candidate, though, right? It would have been this year, right? I mean,
Johnson's doing okay. Yeah, you know, he's 9-10%.
Right.
Well, he's going to get a lot of Republican George Bush votes, I'll tell you right now. You know, they're going to go there. They're not going to go to Jill Stein. They're going to go to, you know.
What's interesting, though, is he seems to be taking more from Hillary than he does from.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Yeah. A lot of polls, her lead narrows a little bit when you include Gary Johnson and Jill Stein, too. Well, I mean the two of them together, though.
All right. A few more letters.
We're still getting letters, Joe. You may be surprised about this. Maybe you weren't here. I don't think you were here.
I wasn't, but I followed online.
We're still getting letters about criticism of the beach ball, bikinis.
The volleyball.
Well, I was on that day. Yeah, Rosemary was in everyone's grill on that.
Okay, so dear Roundtable. Although it says they're round table, and I think that may have been profound, all of his easy-to-write, easy-to-read basic knowledge books should be called Killing Paper. Brian.
Oh, that's Bill O'Reilly. Yeah. Oh, that's a funny line. He has known his books are Killing Reagan and Killing Patton, Killing Jesus, Killing Kennedy. Killing Lincoln. Yeah. So, yeah, okay, that's a funny line.
The scholarship on those books does not seem to be particularly deep.
No.
Yeah. Killing Reagan book was a particularly.
I read the I don't know. I can't speak on the scholarship on the Jesus book. You know, I don't know. It's wrong testament for me. But I'll assume it didn't go that deep.
Thank you, Rich.
What is that, Rich Honan?
Well, they come out so quickly too. He has a new one like every year.
Yeah,
or so.
Running out of people to kill.
Well, Peter in New Paltz writes, the attempt to stop voter fraud is similar to the Texas abortion clinic law. The real intent of each is abundantly clear, but they both have a stated purpose that is meant to mislead. There is no significant pattern of in-person voter fraud, so the changes in the rules are completely unnecessary. Well, I tend to agree with that, for whatever it's worth. And I think he's right on...
I think he's right that there's very little evidence of voter fraud.
And also... I don't think he's wrong about the real purpose of these.
How would we have evidence of voter fraud? I always ask that. How would people know affirmatively? How would you know when somebody goes in and says yes, I'm registered, and then they vote? Do they follow up? How do you even know if there's voter fraud? They always say there's no evidence. There's no way of showing that.
There are lots of ways of showing it, and I gave you your chance. I pointed at
had to think about it a little bit. It's a fair point, but
thinking.
Yeah, we don't allow that on the show.
I do know what you mean, but there have been academic studies and research. I mean, I'm sure that they found ways to try to measure it.
Exactly. I'm sure of that, too. Okay. Yes, the media is crooked, says Sean. The New York Times put Trump in their entertainment section for the first few months of campaigning. Huffington posted the same and kept him there till May of this year. Also of interest is how much money the Clintons get for speaking tours while corporations in foreign states like Saudi Arabia try to buy influence. Then they give one-tenth of their $10 million 2015 income to their own Clinton Foundation. Conflicts abound, says Sean.
But it's not accurate about the New York Times keeping Trump in the entertainment section.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Yeah. I think
the Huffington Post did do that. But the Huffington Post is, you know, an explicitly liberal website.
Yeah.
And you can't, even I can't argue that, I mean, the New York Times and even all the traditionally liberal outlets have certainly written a lot about, you know, the Clinton Foundation and you know, the State Department and alleged conflicts of interest. It's not like that story has been, no one's been stepping on that story, right? That's been front and center.
Let us take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Foresight Land Services for over 45 years offering civil engineering, land surveying, planning, and environmental permitting to private and municipal clients in the Berkshires and Eastern New York. ForesightLand.com. Colby Attorney Service, Corporate Formations, Document Retrieval Services, Court Filings, and Legal Publishing for the legal and professional community since 1939. ColbyService.com. Dorset Theater Festival, presenting Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill by Lainey Robertson, the life and music of jazz great Billie Holiday, August 18th through September 3rd. DorsetTheaterFestival.org for tickets. And from Pelham Auto Service at the Amherst-Belchertown Line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig, a worker-owned and operated service repairing foreign cars since 1972, PelhamAuto.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. And let's go to a couple of other things real quick before we. This story is getting more and more press, and I think it obviously for two reasons. One is because it has a marquee athlete involved in it, but also because I think it brings us to the story that we were all expecting, that there was going to be a lot of problems at the Rio Olympics and when it came to security, when it came to the safety of our athletes. And then yesterday we found out that four Olympic swimmers, were one gold medal winner, Ryan Lochte, were coming home from a celebration, and they were in a taxi, and they got stopped, had a gun pointed to their head, and then were robbed. The question there, then there was a bunch of strangeness with the IOC and a lot of other people saying that it did happen or it didn't happen. The only person that really admitted that it happened ultimately was Ryan Lochte's mother, which I thought was interesting. And but I think it was once again a reminder of some of the stories that have been happening in Rio and happening around the Olympic Games, and kind of a tap on the shoulder of what's going on there. As from my understanding, has led to even more training of the athletes to tell them where to go and not to go and so forth to ensure their safety.
Mm. Yeah. Well, as I said this morning, Roselle, my wife, has spent some time in Rio and said it's a terribly dangerous city, number one. And number two, it was fascinating to read the Times account. You had to get down to the last paragraph. But the security people said, basically, we told them not to go outside of the green line here. Yeah. And they went. And of course, if you notice the timing on when this all happened, it was like early in the morning. And of course, that doesn't excuse the fact that it happened. But when you go into a dangerous place, you've got to be careful.
It's worth pointing out that the same thing could probably happen in any large American city, too.
Right out front on...
Perhaps even in Albany, yes.
And it is true. You know, you're right. You don't blame the victim, but it look, business people forever, you know, have been told, you know, when you go to Rio, you know, there's places you don't travel. You usually don't take the same route twice and the whole thing, and you take your... Mm. You always have a guide when you go down there, and you go out, you go... into the bat in the wrong areas. That could happen in Chicago. That could happen here.
Could certainly happen in Guatemala. It could certainly happen, you know, in some of these very difficult places where my daughter, when she was writing her PhD on Latin American politics, was told in certain cities, never, ever go anywhere on foot. Get into the taxi and get out of the taxi.
But I heard a lot of my friends who spent a lot of time in Latin America say that, you know, it's kind of a shame they picked Rio when they could have picked places in Colombia or Chile or just other places that, believe it or not, are safer, are cleaner, are less poor.
They have less issues
going
in. All right, let's see. I also want to go to the as soon as I can bring it up, I will get to it. The Milwaukee story. Protests turn violent after officer fatally shoots fleeing man. There was a second night of violence last night. Angry demonstrators clashed with police after a police officer fatally shot a man who had a gun during a foot chase that turned deadly. The violence erupted in the city's predominantly black north side, an area beset with a history of violence and distrust between police and the community. During a press conference midnight Sunday, Mayor Tom Barrett stood beside city leaders to plead for an end to the chaos that has been unfolding for hours on city streets. "We have to have calm. There are a lot of really good people who live in this neighborhood," and once again showing the great stress and troubles between these communities and law enforcement.
Mm.
Yeah, and pointing out again that Rio is not the only city in the world with you know, difficult neighborhoods and tension.
So if you take the word of the people who were of the police here, first of all, it was a black officer who shot.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, they pointed out right away that this guy had a lot of issues in the past. He had a long arrest record. So from the police point of view, it's open and shut. However, because we are examining all of this from a sociological problem, which is, do people have choices here? In other words, if you force them into crime, you know, look, if I get held up on outside 318 Central Avenue, I want a cop there, and I want a cop to protect me. There's no two ways about it. And on the other hand, I do think that post-slavery in this country, we have repressed an entire population. And from a sociological point of view, we can understand what some of the ramifications are.
I think you'll get a lot of disagreement, including from me, though, that anyone is forced into a life of crime. I mean, there are many, many people in those neighborhoods who don't live lives of crime. Correct.
Without question. And no, number one, you're right about that. And number two, that you're also right about, if you follow up further, is it's black on black crime, which puts the black population in some of these difficult neighborhoods at the greatest risk of all.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about, though? The one of the things that there was the article in the New York Times this morning talking about how that this was an explosive release decades in the making. What do you think it is about? Mm. We've seen so many of these incidents that some have violent outbursts like this one. Certainly we saw that in Ferguson and in Baltimore, but we don't see it other places. And you have to wonder of what causes that type of violence.
I would assume, I mean, you know, it's a location by location question, but I would assume that it means that, you know, it has something to do with the relationship between the police and the citizenry. I mean, we've had things happen here in Albany and nothing has happened at all. And I think that's partly because the police have done a pretty good job of working with the community and reaching out to people like Alice Green and Barbara Smith and I think there's a good working relationship there that may not exist in some of these other cities.
And also the political leadership is important. So if you have a mayor, for example, who has identified herself as a progressive, and, you know, as opposed to the old style leadership that was in Albany, which was, I think, it could be said, was probably more repressive, then that has to figure into the equation also.
Yeah, but Alan, that doesn't hold up to scrutiny because in all of these, you know, the 10 most violent cities are all led by so-called progressives, the 10 most crime-ridden cities, and the 10 most poorest cities are all led by people who call themselves, you know, liberal Democrats or progressives.
You know, Rich, you make a good point. I say that because what happens is that when some liberals are elected into some of these positions and promise change and the change doesn't occur, then you get some of the acting out that you've seen.
Maybe is it possible that it's also there's a collision when you have a city run by a Democratic leadership, you're having a collision between two traditional constituencies of the Democratic Party, meaning the people living in the low-income neighborhoods and the unions that are charged with either defending or taking care of that city.
What do you mean by the unions, Rich?
The police unions, the city unions, those unions who are there's two traditional Democratic constituencies that are now at odds with each other. And I think so in Milwaukee, for example, if the people are against the police, how does a Democratic leadership balance that?
I sure as hell would love to poll the police union members to find out who they're voting for this year.
We are out of time, and we welcome your letters. We'll end it there. And roundtable at WAMC.org. My thanks to Alan and Chris and Rich. Thank you all. Very nice to have you here.
Thank you.
We will be back with more Roundtable after this short break.